the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Very good Friday. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. And you just listened, I think, if you are one of those that catch parts of the replay and then move right into the live today version. You just listened to our man, Neil Kleinberg. Hope you enjoyed it. And I sent out a couple of recipes as discussed yesterday. They're on Twitter. I'll put them on Facebook, too. I put sweet potato pie and that Nantucket cranberry sauce. I hope we convinced a couple of you to make fresh, real cranberry sauce. If we did nothing else this week, we will head into a Thanksgiving week break. We'll give you best of next week. And first time we've actually taken the week, but I wasn't going to be available Tuesday anyway. And so I thought, and a lot of the, you know, a lot of the holiday cards aren't going to be drawn. So It just made sense. So it's a great week, though, between the holiday and then the racing. We'll talk about some of the racing, as we did, for instance, with KK earlier today, you know, yesterday's show. You listened. And Marty McGee will join us, too, and get some thoughts from Marty heading into the final stage of the season and the year at Churchill. And we'll do the same thing. Jay Pribman. Jay's going to swing through at the top of the hour briefly. And we'll get similar thoughts from Jay, as well as some recapping from last week. And looking ahead to that Hollywood Turf action. At the top of hour three today, too, Jason Boulay from Fairgrounds. I wanted to make sure to get a Fairgrounds preview, meet advance, knowing that we wouldn't be together live next week. So Jason's going to join us, and you know, in a lot of ways, things in New Orleans better than anticipated, because, of course, the canceling of Jazz and Heritage Festival essentially kept the turf course intact. So everybody that was a little put off balance, let's say, by the potential of not having turf at the beginning of the Fairgrounds meet, don't have to worry about it. And next Thursday now, and they've got the first cart up. And we'll get the table set for the Fairgrounds season. FGNO, Fairgrounds New Orleans. And I will mention, I'm sure I'll mention it again later on. And we'll remind from last year, Chad Schexnader. He's going to do the Fairgrounds podcast show that they've done, and he'll have, you know, he'll have terrific guests, and he's got oh my gosh, the Mikey D, the clocker, and the morning line maker. As his partner. So, if you didn't take advantage of the Fairgrounds Racing Podcast. Put it on your list, and you should follow Chad. Schexnola, S-C-H-E-X-N-O-L-A. All right. Just let Casey know. Nick got tied in for a second. We were gonna launch right into Nick Tamaro, and Nick and I are gonna go through the carryover sequence at Aqueduct. You got a $30,000 pick six carryover into today's card that was already, you know, was already exciting and interesting. With big full fields, and in fact, somebody who was it on Twitter said, "Double carryover is already anticipating a double carryover into Saturday's card potentially." I don't know. I'm anxious to hear. It was Mike Ferrari. Mike said, "I could knit this for $3,000," and I know what he means. But there happens to be a couple of spots in the sequence where I think you could lean. I think you could put a budget ticket together. I'll be anxious to see what Nick's thoughts are about this sequence. But there's some very good races. There's a second level allowance going a mile and 3/16 as the feature. There's back-to-back maiden specials, one for New York Breds, boys, and then open company fillies. They're going long on the turf. And there's some, you know, there's a few different strong angles that are involved in this sequence as it happens, including blinkers off for Chad in that mile and 3/16 ninth race. He's got just a huge ROI and percentage in the 40s, taking the hood off. L'Imperator. Now, I know his other horse, Perjury Trap, is going to get plenty of attention. And you may just do well to try to get through that race with the two Chad horses. There's a couple of good ones outside. Shug's got Baker's Bay coming off his best career best last. And another effort like that will be competitive here. And then there's Morley with Temple on the outside, the old Maker horse. It's a really good group. In fact, there's also Joe Sharp down inside. Scares me. Hierarchy, 12-1. The whole card is terrific. There's one of my favorite angles, the old triple whammy that you know I love. I can't resist Silver Token in that eighth race for Horacio De Paz and Barry Schwartz dropping down, cutting back turf to dirt. Yeah, the triple whammy. 8-1, Silver Token, the 3 in that eighth race, which is a 16-2. So, I mean, there's some places to lean. The maiden races, I think you need to use 2-3 at least, both races. There's a first-time Chad turf router, Beachfront Bid, who certainly has got to be taken seriously. In that seventh race, there's some pedigrees involved. This will be a I hope a fruitful discussion, and hope can help you get your ticket prepared as we wait. And Nick should be maybe try Nick now, Case. In addition to Nick, and then Marty McGee. As promised, Joe Paese is going to join us. Joe, who is the Beat Bic contest winner. So we'll get Joe in here, and looking forward to that. Joe, first time he's qualified for NHC, and he says he's tried a few times and come very close. So, you know, winning a pick and pray, not easy. Not easy. So well done. Looking forward to talking to Joe. Priv, as mentioned, Scully, we'll get James Scully by in hour two, and we'll get some plays for the weekend from James. Maybe get some football from James as well. Kim Weir, I promised Kim Weir a visit. The hay drive continues for the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, and they're very, very close on their goal. I think they were trying to raise $60,000, and there may be some matching funds involved and more. So Kim Weir will swing by. Jason Boulay is mentioned. Hammer is probably 2 hours into his drive on his way to Hot Springs. So we'll check in with Hammer. We'll see where he is. And Bobby Shoemaker will swing through. We'll get a couple of plays from Bobby as well. And there it is. There's a busy Friday as we head into Thanksgiving week. All right. I guess I will slip this in while we wait for a couple of news stories. There were a couple of notable news stories that we'll probably have to revisit when we get back from Thanksgiving. The first was the absolutely head-shaking meeting of the Illinois Racing Board, who is going to sit until next month on Churchill Downs's application to operate the OTB parlors, like the Arlington, you know, that well-known Arlington, there's a name for it, I'm going to forget, Trackside, the Trackside OTB and others. And people just incredulous listening to the meeting. We'll probably get to Marcus with that as well. And after a day of speculation, Peter Miller had a press release that he's going to step away from active training, and there'll be plenty of speculation on that, but not a priority to dive into right now, because I hear Nick Tamaro in the background. Nick, good morning.
You know, good morning, Steve. I think what you hear in the background is Godfather 2, but because I'm staying quiet. it is on showtime, and so I have been up for a few hours watching it, and it's worth the good parts. They've Fredo's in Cuba, so yeah, we got a lot going on here this morning.
I love it, and I know you're getting on the road as well, and there's a bunch of things we could do, but we're going to have to be sharp and dive right in to the Friday carryover sequence, because I'm really anxious for your input. I put together a base ticket of $96 and, then the potential for some backups, and we had been anticipating this Friday card anyway, and then lo and behold, we get a $30,000 carryover to add to the appeal. So let's ping pong through this, starting in the fifth.
Yeah, this the racing at Aqueduct. I mean, we could go on and on about how incredible it's been over the last few days. Well, I mean, yesterday and last weekend was very, very good, but then I think today's card is probably the best we've seen at the Young Need. And, one of the things about it that's been so difficult is that we have these races like we see in this sequence today that are just super deep and competitive, very hard to narrow down, and that gets very difficult, especially in terms of a multi-race play. I thought the fifth was an interesting race. I like Rivendell, who's going to be a relatively big price from the inside. Stolen Holiday came out of that race behind Love and Thunder to win. Rivendell, I thought, was pretty pace compromised in there. I don't love this horse, but this is a horse that I wanted to pick that's going to be a decent enough price. And looking through this field, it's like, okay, well, Ogotten Girl's the horse to beat, and she likely has a pace advantage. Messador is going to be incredibly overbet because she's had two very difficult trips in a row. I'm just not sure how much Messador really wants to get there at 6 furlongs on a late autumn turf course at Aqueduct. That's the danger. Javier Castellano is going to have to get her into position to be dangerous. I picked her in the money, and she wouldn't surprise me at all. Neither would Silky Blue cutting back.
Jorge
has good numbers, 25%, $4 plus ROI, cutting back on the turf. And I even thought that Wow had a chance. I liked Wow last time, and she got the job done. She's not a 30-to-1 shot in this race.
No.
So, I mean, you could go through her PPs and you look at some of the horses that she's had the misfortune of running into throughout her career, even going back to last year. Off a good debut, she ran into Island Treasure, Technical Analysis, Jouster, two of whom ended up being stakes horses. So I think she's a horse that's got a little bit more seasoning, even though she's just a recent maiden winner.
Interesting. Boy, I mean, Rivendell's a horse that I've certainly bet in the past. I did not give serious look to him in this spot. I thought there were three horses I was going to use to get through this. And, of course, Ogotten Girl is one. You mentioned Silky Blue, who I picked. And then I thought that Donk with Screamin' Bye was far from impossible.
Yeah, they all come out of a common race, and I don't know necessarily who you want, it, more specifically than who you don't want. I thought the Tuscan Queen ran, originally yep. I thought the Tuscan Queen ran best. The more I watched the replay, I realized Jade Jelly actually ran better. And so, I don't think Jade Jelly is much. Screamin' Bye looks like a horse that probably is a little bit better against state breds. But again, I mean, this is an incredibly competitive race. The biggest concern, of course, here is that Eric Cantel has no ability to get position in turf sprints. So he's going to have to keep her within range because she's not quite good enough to start running over a bunch of these horses. But look, her win three back, albeit on a yielding turf course, was good enough to be competitive.
That's been what I thought, and was in that same in that same vein. And then there's horses like Sport Model that are not far off. Mesidor, I didn't think. If I was to go seven deep, I might not get to Mesidor.
Yeah, I'll tell you, this is the horse that's sort of the linchpin in the race, because if you're a trip handicapper, you want to bet this horse, but you really want it to bet her at a mile. And I think that Kristoff probably would have preferred to get her to have another opportunity to run her around the one-turn mile rather than having to go six furlongs, because I think this is just a little short. Seven-eighths would have probably been right in her wheelhouse.
Get to the second leg, which is a state bred maiden group going three quarters on the main track. And there's a couple that have run that Safalo's Mission. This is Joe Besseker and makes a second start from George Weaver. G Munning, firster I used from Kimmel. Gary's got Salty Air, which is interesting. Salty Air is a half to Lobster and Chowda. But Eddie Fazone didn't get his hands on this one. He happens to have the next one, the Yearling, who's going to be named Oyster. But Salty Air managed to slip through the cracks. And Salty Air, it won't surprise me if Salty Air breaks on top, but I thought Safalo's Mission and G Munning is the firster and the horse with experience that I want.
Yeah, I thought Safalo's Mission ran well on debut. It was a restricted maiden race. Don't confuse, of course, the state bred restriction with that restriction. That's the one with the auction or RNA price of $45,000 or less. Safalo's Mission ran well. That was a very strong pace. He ended up kind of dueling the other pace horses into the ground before getting caught late. I thought that Salty Air was interesting. Of course, Gary's done really well with Lobster and Chowda. They both needed a start or two. So you wonder if Salty Air might be a little bit quicker based on that recent workout. Micromanage is not a good first outsider, but maybe he's one for 24.
45.
One for 25
more.
With two-year-old first-time starters.
Yeah, terrible. So, overall, one for 48 with his debut runners.
Right, exactly. And Emily, he wasn't exactly much of a racehorse, but he's been a decent enough New York bred stallion. This is a horse who'll probably get better with experience. I'm not sure if that's going to be the case with Bold Journey. Bold Journey looks like a horse that might be working really well. Of course, we don't have the luxury of workout reports at the Aqueduct meet, but the recent half-mile bullet, this is a horse that I think if you're playing the pick six, you're going to want to look at the doubles and see what kind of action we're seeing to the 12, because this horse looks like one that could really take money. I kind of thought it was among those four. I wasn't exactly sure what to do with G Munning. John Kimmel's not great first time out, but definitely there was a little bit of a look there.
Third leg is Open Company, Long on the Grass, the two-year-olds, and Mrs. Weber's Homebred, Quality Control, making a second start and stretching out for Trombetta. And he brings this Quality Road filly up from Laurel and a half to March to the Arch and Global Access. March, of course, is with Cassie. Global Access, Trombetta's had great success sending that Live Oak up to Woodbine and winning stakes. So I thought quality control was important here. Beachfront bid, Chad, first time, over a mile, etc. Shuggy's got Skims, the 9, and Grand Motion, Mesa Aria, 6-1. There's pedigree there. And then there's Christophe Clement, who's terrific debuting at a route distance, and Miss Sugar Hill, a Churchill filly, and out of an Invincible Spirit mare for the Reeveses. And I was lukewarm on Miss Sugar Hill, but the other ones I thought all were worthy of real consideration on your tickets.
Yeah, I picked Quality Control. I kind of wish she had run a little bit better in her debut, but she did break very, very slowly, got left in the gate, kind of just plodded along early, and then Julian Pimentel hand-rode her into the stretch. He asked her to run a little bit, and she put forth a really quick burst for about a furlong or a furlong and a half, and then she got tired, and, to me, I know that there's a limited amount of turf racing left in Maryland, but this felt like a situation where he wanted to get her to a route and obviously was perfectly happy to run for 80,000. So this filly feels like she still has upside. I kind of wanted to make Skims a little bit, but I don't know if that Leah Marina race is very good. It's worth noting there's another also ran from that race in the first today, a Todd Pletcher horse on the outside. I'm just not sure how much running this horse did, and I think she's going to be pretty overbet at 4-1. You mentioned Miss Sugar Hill, who's the morning line favorite, Churchill filly with the European dam side. I also thought Beachfront Bid was a little interesting in terms of firsters, obviously drawn poorly on the outside, but this is a horse that the dam was all dirt. She was actually very cheap. And there were a couple of turf winners in the family, one of whom earned an 84 buyer speed figure winning on the turf. Another of whom earned 108 buyer speed figure. Or, I'm sorry, earned a win on the turf, I should say. But this is a horse with a little bit of turf pedigree. And obviously, Chad Brown doesn't need much turf pedigree to get a horse like this to win. So, again, I mean, this is another incredibly competitive race. It felt like you could go a few different directions, but I thought there was enough interesting to me about Quality Control.
The second half of the sequence, this $30,000 pick six carryover into today's action, starts in race 5 at 145, and the eighth race is a 16 non-2. And what I thought was notable was that there were four droppers coming from $30,000 and $40,000 company, and I'm going to lean fairly heavily on the 8-1 Silver Token, the 3. This is my favorite triple whammy, dropping down, cutting back, turf to dirt, and you put that together, kind of an auto play. I thought Brunate, is consistent in a group that isn't so consistent, and I'm going to try to get away with those two, the 3 and the 6.
Yeah, I think this is a race where you do kind of want to get a little bold, especially because Faraway Look really has kind of a stink to him. He doesn't look like a horse you want to go out of your way to bet. Claimed for 40,000, immediately dropping to 16. Dub is one of the sharpest claimers out there. I don't think you really like the look of that at all. And DePaz is obviously trying to win races, especially with new clients, but this is a very ugly looking claim. I think could be said. What was interesting to me about Silver Token, as you referenced, is he's making the turf to dirt move. This horse has only run on dirt once before. He got Van Doff in his debut, but he was 5-2 in that race. And that was a $50,000 New York Bred Maiden claimer a couple of years ago when he was in the care of Linda Rice. So he's sort of a blank slate on dirt. And we've seen DePaz use this move with a great amount of success. So I felt like he was one that if you could afford to get in there, you definitely needed to. Papa Smooth is just so clearly the main speed in this race. Now, the problem with him is that he's had opportunities like this and squandered them. I also don't know how committed his rider is going to be to getting the lead. His rider rode a speed horse for Ray Handley yesterday, very tentatively early, and he ended up watching Dancing Buckwire the field. I hope that there's some intent here and that this horse is ridden aggressively because he really should get clear of this field. I thought Maddie's Marauder was a little bit dangerous. Two back, he finished second in a very, very weak race, but he's definitely a better horse when he can settle and make one run. I do think he was over his head a bit last time out. Those were kind of the four to me. I don't have an argument against Brunate, who's coming back off a bit of a layoff. Jimmy Bond's Barn usually gets going again at Aqueduct. And this is a horse who's run particularly well at Aqueduct, and I think you always want to heed these types, especially this time of year.
Yeah, I'm pretty much on board all the way there. The ninth, the feature, is a mile and 3/16 on the grass on the outer turf. And I thought it was worth noting, Nick, that you know, at the mile and 3/16 to mile and a quarter distance, which get a kind of, you know, bunched together for distance purposes, half of this field has won at the distance. Hierarchy, Doswell, L'Imperator, Baker's Bay, and Temple have all won. I'm going to lean on L'Imperator, and I know the other Chad is going to be very popular, Perjury Trap, and you know, actually have been very successful of late, reaching for the other Chads. But Chad's numbers, taking blinkers off, 37% for $3.79. And even if you're not a big blinker statistic type, note that Lasix goes back on for L'Imperator. And I think that that is worth paying attention to as well. So I'm going to try to, you know, get through with L'Imperator. I'll probably have Perjury Trap on a backup ticket. And Baker's Bay, that last race fits very well here, that forward move. A repeat of that makes him, you know, very competitive. But I'm going to keep it simple with L'Imperator.
Yeah, I think most of the public is going to be clued into Perjury Trap, watching Talking Horses and watching America's Day at the Races, because Perjury Trap is a horse I know that Andy Serling is very fond of in this spot. And it has to do with the fact that he was wide the entire way on opening day at Belmont. And if you remember back to Value Engineering winning a race a few weeks ago, it was a similar circumstance where he was wide much of the way. He came back and he beat a much more fancied stablemate at 5-2, and now looks like a contender in the Red Smith. So this similar situation with Perjury Trap. He didn't really get a chance to save any ground. The concern, of course, is that I'm not quite sure he's good enough to beat these horses.
Mm.
So I picked him. You know, I want to bet horses that have been wide against the grain of the track, pretty much regardless of circumstance. But he's going to have to elevate his game a little bit, especially if L'Imperator can run back to really those two good races that he ran earlier in the summer. And I do think getting Lasix back, the blinkers coming off, likely will help him relax a little bit early after he was pretty headstrong last time. Jose getting on versus Irad might be a, you know, a little bit of a decent change, just as a kind of a change of scenery compared to the two good races. But yeah, I felt like Chad kind of had a lock on this one. I've always been kind of a Doswell fan, but I know he may have needed his start last time, but he was terrible. He didn't get a particularly great ride in terms of Dylan being a little tentative and the pace was solid, but I mean, Bodie Cream and Atone are not, those are not horses that strike fear into anybody, and he gave way pretty readily, so I kind of wanted to focus on those two.
The Nightcap is a maiden claimer for 40, and there's about a half a dozen horses that that are more or less in the vicinity as win candidates. But My Sunny Valentine getting back on grass kind of jumps off the page a little bit. The four starts, the turf race was absolutely her best to date. So getting back on turf, My Sunny Valentine 6-1. The Chad and Seth Klarman with Control Function, the one debuting here for a you know, $40,000 price, might be attractive to be claimed, and it might just be a case, you know, for a horse that was almost $200,000 new. You know, they're basically saying this is where she can win. So I'm going to respect that. Wicked Happy is one of those funny horses. I brought these up. We were talking this concept with Andy on Tuesday, Nick, as we were going over the Sunday pick six sequence. And the quandary of a horse like Wicked Happy, who's had all these starts, what, 0-19, but there's several races that would easily win this race, and so you got to at least acknowledge that. A lot of times on a budget, you know, you don't use a horse like this, but she can win. And at the very last minute, I was leaning toward Hit the Nail or Peace Be the Journey. And then all of a sudden, I noticed that Synonymous's race, two back, would win this. And so Synonymous, to me, is a little problematic for Pat Quick.
Yeah, this race is a little problematic, as I think, because you've talked about a number of horses, and if I was playing this, I mean, pretty much anything that I play that I'm going to try here to be pretty aggressive in single raising, because raising did everything on debut that I like to see from a horse that will likely take a huge step forward second time out. She got left in the gate. She ended up making a move up the inside to get into contention, came out at the quarter pole, bumped into a rival, and then sort of regathered herself and put in a decent late run. Now she's with Jimmy Jerkins. All due respect to Tom Bush, this feels like an upgrade to me. Jimmy Jerkins notoriously has been better with horses with a little bit more seasoning. So, yeah, I was very interested in her. I thought PC the Journey was dangerous on the drop, second off the claim. I don't blame Maker for getting a little ambitious. I think he realized now that he saw what she did at a mile and a quarter, what she's really capable of, and likely needs a little bit weaker group of horses. And I agree with you, you know, the quandary of a horse like Wicked Happy is that, yes, she has a number of races that win this one rather handily. It's just you know, a question of whether it could happen again. One thing I'll say about Synonymous is this is an enormous rider change, and this horse did not get a particularly great trip last time. That Bug Boy is he needs a lesser locale for a bit to get a little bit more seasoning. And so with Kendrick getting on, it's a positive. So, and this horse, you know, has a little bit of tactical speed, a good inside post. You can imagine he's going to get a little bit more forwardly placed trip. Not the necessity that it was last week, at least in terms of yesterday, being close and being on the inside on the turf. It was a little bit fairer, you could say, but definitely an advantage to being within range.
Wow. All right. So you and I have got, there's two horses in this sequence that, you've got Rivendell in the first leg and then Raving in the nightcap that, we're going to have to see post scratch, because if you've got both of those involved, I've got to,
if there's like six scratches in every race, I think we're in good shape to play the sequence.
Oh my God. Right. No, it's tough. This is a great sequence. Nick, very quickly, some thoughts about tomorrow. A little bit, got a couple of smaller fields, not a lot smaller, but, you know, there's a 7-horse field to start the pick five at least, and then 12 by 10 by 10 by 10. Run it down real quick.
Yeah, you know, I was disappointed in the 6th race seeing my old friend drafted in the entries, hoping that there was going to be some pace for him to run at, and there really isn't. This is the 6th race tomorrow at Aqueduct. This is a horse who's been terribly disadvantaged by slow paces, bad trips, and so I'm hopeful that maybe he can just get a little bit more engaged. Cost basis is going to be a big favorite in there. He engineered one of the most disgraceful hang jobs you'll ever find last time, finding a way to lose a race where a win was just basically thrown in his face. I don't blame anybody for taking any amount of a shot against him, because he is just not much horse at all. The second leg's a good maiden special weight race. The mod horse on the rail, Iconic Adventure, should run better second time out. Did at least enough running on debut to give you some indication that he has some ability. Sky and Sand from the outside looks dangerous as well. I thought the experienced runners had a pretty big advantage here. And look to be the ones that you'd wanted to focus on. I thought that the 8th was a race where, you know, Kawaimia River probably was best last time, didn't have the cleanest of trips. I think if things go a little bit more in his favor, he could be very tough in here. You got some old hard-knocking veterans that probably can't quite step up. Colton's Command ran well with no pace set up last time. That was at 7-8. He's really going to have to hustle at 6. And you have to admit, you know, horse going from Rosario to anybody else, it's nothing against Jose Ortiz, but Rosario is so good riding turf sprints. We talked about value engineering as far as today's race goes with regards to Perjury Trap. I think he's interesting in the Red Smith. I've always felt like this horse was stakes caliber going long, going all the way back to his narrow miss behind Counteroffer last year when he survived a suicide pace and nearly held on. This is a tricky race. I think Serve the King is going to be a relatively solid favorite coming off the second in the Turf Classic. I mean, we can all reach the conclusion together that this was not a historic version of the Turf Classic. It was a very, very weak race. I don't give Serve the King any extra credit for having run where he did. You know, I thought Value Engineering might also be a little bit forwardly placed, and I don't think that's a big problem. Channel Cat will obviously go to the lead. We'll see how far he can take them. He's getting the blinkers on, and obviously he's done his best work when he's been on the front end. We've seen this race and a lot of races in the late autumn at Aqueduct go to to pace horses when we see things get a little spongy. So worth noting that you may want to give him a little bit of an extra look. And then in the nightcap, Catching Cupid's clearly the one to beat for Charlie Baker. Second time out off a really good debut. I think you can focus a lot of your action there. The alternative to me looked like Caveman. I think Mariah Montoya is a very underrated trainer. We saw her win a couple of races at Aqueduct last winter with a from Philly. Caveman looked at least to have a little bit of a look to me.
There we go. Aqueduct, and the action continues all the way through Sunday. The cards are just dynamite, and should be a terrific weekend into next week. Nick, happy Thanksgiving to you and your folks and everybody, the girls, and we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Sounds great. Enjoy your time off, my friend. Happy Thanksgiving to you and Tina, the new grandbabies and everything else. And
thanks.
Good luck to everybody. Happy Thanksgiving.
Nick Tamaro, folks, NTAM1215. Marty McGee is stopping by here for just a couple of minutes so that we can wish him a happy Thanksgiving and get his plans because it's going to be a busy week in the Ville as we talked yesterday with Kevin Kirstein. Marty, good morning.
Happy birthday tomorrow there, Vic.
And to you as well on the other side as we start the famous trifecta, the Bick McGee Privman birthday sequence. And in fact, Jay's on next, in a couple of minutes. That's right. The birthday season's upon us. I thank you. Thank you.
Vic, what time were you born on November 20th,
7:01. 7:01 a.m. 7:01 a.m.
Okay, so you're less than 24 hours older than me. I was born at like 5:30 in the morning on November 21st, 1959.
Well, and they say that if you're born in the morning, that helps you be a morning person. They say it's absolutely tied to your waking habits and so forth.
It's been true for me, especially in my old age.
Yeah, you know, me too. Me too. Exactly.
2:30 in the morning, I haven't gone to sleep at 8 or 8:30, and 2:30 in the morning, there I am thinking about what I'm going to say on the Bick Show.
Well, the first thing you got to say is Neil Pessin stayed home, and Bell's the one capitalized in the Dream Supreme.
I mean, it was a smart move. I mean, we'll never know if she would have been, had the stronger rally than CeCe. But Neil was extremely comfortable with his decision to not run. And, he's looking forward, not back. And he's done a tremendous job. And I was glad to see that Bob Lothenbeck was here last Saturday for the filly because, he doesn't travel all that much to go see his far-flung stable. He was there, and I know Neil and Corey Lannery were just thrilled that they got the job done, and she's going to run again next year at six.
Exactly, and they only have to van over. And I had hoped this week, after we discussed it with Neil about the shipping issue, when we get back after Thanksgiving, I am going to get somebody on the transport side to explain what has happened regarding Tex Sutton and their inability to essentially charter to lease their aircraft as they had and what it has meant to the way in which horses are flown, because the grooms can't travel with the horses now. This is a little inside baseball, but I want people to hear the specifics. So when we get back from Thanksgiving, I'm going to handle that.
You know what's funny? I just thought of this. Mace Siegel was going to start up a competitor. This is probably 20, 25 years ago. But he had the intent, and, he did his due diligence. He was going to start up a competitor to Tex Sutton back then, and for one reason or another, it fell through. But, with them having the only viable type of service that they provided, and now, it happened before the Derby, did it not, back in April or so?
Yeah.
Somebody dropped the ball. I don't know what the story is, but
it keeps being referred to, and I don't think casual players and fans you know what the details are, and I think it's important actually. So we're gonna get that done. Turning to the weekend, Marty, and looking into the close of the meet, essentially, some thoughts about what lies ahead over the next 9 days.
Well, tomorrow we have the Chalukyi, which has come up a pretty interesting race, with Obligatory being a lukewarm program favorite. My brother's in there with Pass the Plate at 20-1, the longest shot on the board, but as far as I'm concerned, she's in with a chance. So that means that pretty much everybody in there. There's one other turf to dirt horse in there on drawn on the open air outside box where the air is fresh and clear, number 8, Princess Causeway, and I would think she would be a forward factor. It's kind of hard to figure out who the speed is in this race, but nonetheless, it's our only stakes of this weekend, the Grade 3 Chalukyi tomorrow at Churchill, and then next week we finish out with 6 stakes. We have the traditional Thanksgiving Day feature, the Grade 2 Fall City, that's coming up really good with En Boutant, Bonnie South, Crystal Ball, and Joel Rosario, who is shooting for all kinds of records. He has them out on Army Wife for Mike Maker. Then the next day, Rosario has them out on Midnight Bourbon, who it looks like will be the only 3-year-old in a short but sweet field for the Clark, and he will face off against Maxfield, who had his final career work today. He's going off to Darley after running next Friday in the Clark. So those will be the two favorites, Maxfield and Midnight Bourbon. And then, of course, on Saturday, we have the second Stars of Tomorrow card on Saturday, and we close out the meet here a week from Sunday, November 28th, and move on to Turfway after that.
Well, and the Turfway, I'm looking forward, actually, to the opportunity to talk to Chip Bach and the team, because this is going to be very interesting, Marty, to see who is staying around. You know, there was going to be a very attractive condition book at Turfway, and I imagine stall demand has been high.
Yeah, oh, for sure. I'm early next week. I'm going to talk to Tyler Picklesheimer and try and get a gauge on it. But I think we've talked about this, Steve. A lot of the big namers, Cox and Asmussen and Maker, of course, Maker and Ward were always there. But a lot of these guys, Brendan Walsh, they're all going to keep back some horses here because the maiden special start, I believe, at 62,000, and the allowance is a little bit higher than that. So. And, you know, you put up the money and they will follow. We got jocks like Talamo and Landeros and Joe Rocco, who's way underrated in my book. Fellows like that are sticking back the whole winter to ride at Turfway.
And speaking of shifting tack, when do you head to Florida?
I'm going to go on Christmas morning, and that lady you put me on for as a real estate agent is working nicely so far, so. We'll see how that goes.
Gave you some options?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I still got to do some work on it, but appreciate that, Vic. You know, like I was telling you, the a normal place of residence kind of fell through. Well, there was a sale, so I had to start over fresh.
Well, and I didn't get a chance to get Eric Hamelbeck on, but. The Claiming Crown, of course, a couple of weeks away?
Well, that would be, I think it's on, what is that, Saturday, December the 4th? I'm almost sure.
Yeah.
It's either the 4th or the 11th, but I'll be throwing in with Mike Welsh on that while still up here in Louisville. But, yeah, that's, you know, I went to that so many years in Minnesota, and I would have thought, I guess just the how powerful the Gulfstream signal is. Even in the summer, it's pretty an amazing phenomenon, really, how popular that Gulfstream signal has become year-round. But nonetheless, they start the championship meet on, December the 1st or 2nd coming up. But, yeah, and then they have the Forsyth on Saturday, tomorrow.
Oh, I saw that actually. There's about 400,000 in that pool. In fact, Mike, you know, considering that it's essentially what this is usually the Tropical Park meet at Calder in November, but Mike's been busy, and it feels like there's a lot of horses that are already down there, and. He actually had a wonderful story about Chantal Sutherland, who has risen like a phoenix and is winning races by the bucket.
Yeah, I mean, and she knows that she knows the synthetic real well from her years in Canada and California back in the day. So, it's going to be interesting to see how she matches up with Irad. And I don't know what Rosario's doing. I don't know if he's going to ride. You know, Ron's been kind of coy about that. I'm sure he'll ride the Cigar Mile card and maybe that first week of December at Aqueduct. But after that, we're all trying to figure out if he's going to go to Oakland or Gulfstream or where.
Well, let's see. He just confirmed that seconds ago in my lap and my phone that the Claiming Crown is on December 4th. And I just wrote to him, Mart. I said, "You being coy? Let's see if Ron delivers an answer to a breathless public."
Well, he gave me his mount. You know, he rides Midnight Bourbon, and he rides Army Wife, like I said, and he also rides the Brian Lynch Phenom, 2-year-old, the Classic Causeway. He'll be the favorite in the Kentucky Jockey Club on Saturday. But, you know, we all need to do Ron a favor. He's on hard times right now, so he does not have a mount in the Goldenrod, so he's looking for one.
Well, if anybody needs his number, it's pretty good. And I just heard from Eric Hamelbeck, and we'll talk to Eric. In fact, we'll be just looking at the post-Thanksgiving plan, because we've got we'll be home for a couple of days before heading to Oaklawn, and then we'll be at Symposium. So you'll hear from Eric certainly from the University of Arizona, which as I mentioned, I think yesterday it came up it's going to be the most interesting symposium ever.
Yeah, he was instrumental in that. The back in the opening days of the Claiming Crown, what was that? 99, it must have been in Shakopee with Dark Star and PA and all the. They got a great crew up there in Canterbury.
Who was the late
Nat Weiss was
Nat Weiss, absolutely.
Yeah, Kurt and Randy Sampson, they were all very proud and justifiably so getting the Claiming Crown off the ground. I guess it's been at Gulfstream about 10 years now. Just the handle figures are such that, it looks like it'll be hard to move it away from Gulfstream.
Well, and the one issue with having the Claiming Crown at Gulfstream is, given the kind of horses that this appeals to and that qualify for it, I mean, essentially these are starter handicaps, with nice purses. The problem is shipping down there. And, I mean, if you're in another part of the country and you're eligible, one of the appeals of having it that year at Ellis and at Canterbury was just the geographic availability and to get down to South Florida is no small feat for
It's not, but neither was the middle of July or the end of July or whenever it
was. Yeah, that's fair.
Shakopee, Minnesota. I mean, we did have it one day at Ellis. I swear, I think it was the hottest day I've ever had at a racetrack. I remember Carolyn Conley doing the on-site stuff for what was it?
HRTV.
I was afraid she was going to melt. I mean, it was just
MacArthur Park.
Had them set up on some pavement where it was like, just radiating off the. It was unbelievable.
Well, speaking of HRTV hot weather, that's the first place I met John White, was at a Summit of Speed at Calder when it was like 106.
Yeah. No, I tell you what, though. I went to Texas, four or five times. They had this all-star jockey Mustang, and it was like 106 in the summer, you know, and it wasn't much cooler at night. I remember being really hot that day, too, at night.
When it comes to Marty McGee, Hermes, on your daily racing form, he's always hot.
Happy birthday, Bick.
Happy birthday to you. What's your Thanksgiving plan?
Horse racing and riding and then some pumpkin pie, I guess.
There you go. Marty, thanks a lot. We'll talk in a few weeks.
Buddy.
Thank you. Marty McGee, everybody. Got about 6-7 minutes to the top of the hour when Jay Privman is going to join us. And I promised to get Kim Weir in from the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. And if I'm not mistaken, with all this birthday talk, I think she just had a birthday. Yes?
Steve, I'm on, and I did, but happy birthday, friend. What a great day to have a birthday.
Well, tomorrow, thank you. But Marty and I were born a day apart in 1959. Just happens.
Excellent. Yeah. My dear friend Sharon Dominguez, it's her birthday today. I just went for a birthday walk with her around the state park here in Saratoga. So it's a good season. It's a good month for people to be born.
How funny. It's also a good month for people to donate to the Hay Drive, and you're approaching the goal, and if I'm not mistaken, there's some matching funds too. Give everybody an update, because filling those hay lofts at the farms got to be done now before the snow flies.
Well, you are absolutely right, and I am so grateful for the chance to talk about the Hay Drive and to get me on today, because I just got an email from our team moments before hopping on with you that we made our goal. We made our goal, Steve. This is a celebratory update. We hit a $60,000 goal. We've got $60,841 thanks to many, many, many of your awesome At the Races listeners. So today, while I still have something to talk about, the really exciting news is we reached the $60,000 goal, which means we triggered a $60,000 match, and we are filling our haylofts with $120,000 worth of hay for our horses. So how's that for a birthday gift? For you.
Well, that's tremendous. I knew there was a match. And what's a bale of hay selling for right now?
I have just in California where I think they're like it's everything expensive, and boy, is hay expensive out there. So I would say they're upwards on the. I'm afraid to say it, someone will tell me I'm wrong, but it's closing in on $20. I mean, that's crazy because it's really high. It's not like that everywhere, and we deal with averages. But hay is only going up, and we are really grateful for these gifts from so many people who have gotten us to this huge, this is our biggest campaign of the whole year. It's timely, as you so well put it. This is the time to fill the haylofts because we are eating off that hay well into April in a lot of our northern farms. So it's a huge accomplishment, and I'm tickled. As much as I wanted to get on here with you today to hustle those last few dollars, I am even happier to come on and say thank you, because this is a testament to folks who care, just like you and everyone who listens to you, Steve, that we have reached our 2021 Hay Drive goal. And we are so grateful to our amazing donors, the Santulli family, who offer that match. So they can feel very good about the fact that they've been supported, and we've reached our goal. So it's a great day in the world of the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, and it never ends, but today is a day to celebrate and to add that into your birthday celebration.
Well, then in that case, since we've crossed the finish line on the Hay Drive, let's talk about the online auction, which goes now through next Saturday.
That is right. Well, I'm so glad to do it. Yes, because it's right. There's always something. We want to make sure there's always something for the folks to look at and pay attention to. And this is a really fun one. It is our annual online auction. It is easy to find. It's actually an event on our website. It runs through the 27th. So it's really perfect for all that holiday shopping that all of your audience are starting to think about with the Turkey Day around the corner. It is an auction for horse racing fans. There are all kinds of things in there. We are grateful to everyone who's donated the things that are in the auction, and they range from halters and derby glasses and clothing and art and jewelry. And then they move on to things like that are experiences, which include visits to our TRF Chestnut Hall farm, where Steve, you and I might have last crossed paths in person. and even some horse farm experiences up here and around Saratoga at some of the breeding farms. So it is, there's a little something for everyone is what our goal is, especially, well, I would say you pretty much have to love horses if you're going to find something you like in our auction.
No, and I'm going through the eBay. I'll put the link up to it. It's actually a very eclectic set of items, and you know, some are things that'll be you know, people will gloss over, but others will be excited by. And I do see you mentioned halters. Here's a Serena's Song halter. You know, something that you don't see all that often. More Than Ready. It's already up to $202. There's lots of photos and art. There's some interesting collectibles too. Some antique. Wow, those wooden racehorses. I can't tell if they're antique or if they're just sort of fashioned to look antique-y.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking at them too. No, they're really cool. And I don't know if there's more detail in the great condition. See photo for detail.
Something tells me they're old. Yeah, there's some wind photos and things that are coming out of, you can tell, coming out of personal collections and a little bit of everything always worthwhile. You mentioned, racing experiences, and there's some things from an international vein. How do you beat this? A morning with Mig at Saratoga. It's already up to $500. How about that? You spend the morning with Mig.
Priceless experience. I had the good fortune to accompany our winner. We put the same auction item in our barbecue at the barn auction this year, and wonderful gal here in Saratoga won it. And then I had to be there to be helpful, and that's my goal. But I really got to tag along for the tour, and oh my gosh, it is just an amazing thing to listen to that great guy tell his stories and the history, and it was beautiful. I cannot say enough about that particular one because I've even seen it with my own eyes.
Very cool.
A good one. Those experiences are my favorite. I have to say, I think I've gotten past the point of stuff. My husband is the very opposite. He loves the collectibles, and we have an awful lot of derby glasses and Jim Beam decanters, but the experiences are indeed priceless because they involve people.
Well, and these kinds of auctions, there's a lot of money raised, and it's a perfect, really a perfect way to give. It's as painless as it gets, because you end up with something that you'll keep forever. So go through it. I'll send out the link to it. Here's a John Henry pin from Hollywood Park in 1985. So that's a double-edged. Here's something I've never seen from the Meadowlands, Peb caricature plates and cups. I've never seen these.
I love it, Steve.
Oh, this is very cool.
There are treasures in here, and I want to make sure we say thank you to those who've given us these treasures. They've come from individuals. They've come from sometimes it's donors who've given a long time and said, listen, I have a collection I want to give up. Just so many people look into their own hearts and give us things that we then offer up, and the donations that come as bids are so, so appreciated. So I love that you're finding things. Steve, you can knock off your whole shopping list in a quick bunch of bids if you're into it.
It's not a shopping list. It's just stuff that I'll keep. These PEB plates, and I'm telling you, I've never seen these. I've never seen them up even in an auction. Bill Shoemaker, Lafitte Pinkai, Steve Cawthon, Angel Cordero, Eddie Delahousse, and Bill Shoemaker. They look like they're in absolute mint pristine condition. And then there's also three, they're not matching cups, but there's three, what looks to be three coffee mugs. I guess they're PEBs too. And maybe they are matching. Or they correspond anyway. The bidding starts at $40. This is really cool. I've never seen these.
Well, this is going to be the big pick of the whole.
Yeah, exactly.
And
Very cool. I
do think they've caught the eye of a couple of folks in my household, and I love that you have found them amidst this. It's sort of like a little bit of a needle in a haystack, but it's a really good haystack. Every straw is a good one. It's just looking for the right person who thinks it's interesting. That's the magic of the auction.
Well, and here's a set of plates from Long Acres. This is the John White collection, and of course, you do have to drive from Tacoma to Seattle to pick them up. That's an inside joke, John. John will appreciate that. That's great. Vintage Long Acre collectible plates from the Seattle Derby. Unbelievable. Check it out. Kim, as always, there's so many ways to contribute and help the herd. This goes until the 27th. We got until a week from tomorrow.
Yeah, you can digest your turkey and shop online and do good for the horses. And because it is Thanksgiving season, Steve, I just want to say a very personal, heartfelt thanks to you from all of us at the TRF and all of our 500 happy horses that are grateful to you for what you do for us. And you help us tell our story. And you give me a few minutes on a busy day. So thank you to you, and thank you to everyone listening for the support you offer us. We are so, so grateful, and we're so excited about what comes next. There will be more, but for today, it's a big message of thank you to you.
Well done, Kim. Kim Weir, everybody. TRF Inc., TRFINC.org, the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation that has as difficult a task as any aftercare organization, because when a horse gets to them, might be from age 6 to 26, or from, you know, 3 to 30, they maintain the largest retired racehorse herd in North America, and do an amazing job. TRFinc.org, and contribute painlessly by buying yourself something off the holiday auction. Kim, happy Thanksgiving, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you, Steve.
Kim Weir does a terrific job, and happy slightly belated birthday to Kim. It's the miracle of Facebook. You know when everybody's birthday is, right? Pretty funny. Jay Bridman's going to join us, and just a kind of the same quick hit to end the pre-holiday, the first set of holiday when it comes to Thanksgiving, and we'll do the year end, of course, in December. But with the good racing that lays ahead at Del Mar next week, and this week too, actually, you got a nice stake. I'm just going back. I want to make sure I got the dates right for next week. Here we go. The Hollywood Turf Festival, which really is as anticipated a late calendar, set of races as there is anywhere in the country. The Hollywood Derby and the Turf Cup and the Matriarch. And given the situation, I mean, let's all, be honest. We'd prefer that Hollywood Park still be around. I mean, that would be the first preference. Having this Bing Crosby season that has been fashioned at Del Mar, it's got an identity of its own. And of course, the two Breeders' Cups that have been melded onto it. Particularly great way to start. So this weekend, the Native Diver, which is one of the great Hollywood standards, one of the great racehorses in Hollywood history. Jay Privman, good morning.
Hey, Steve, how are you?
Excellent. I wanted to make sure to get to you and get a quick hit in anticipation of next week, and also to get some recapping in after last week, the two Baffert winners, Messier, who looks like a four-year-old, and Ada, the Munnings, that won the Desi Arnaz, and then a look at what's ahead the next 10 days.
Yeah, no, we've had, you know, the races last week are kind of prep races, really, for the Los Alamitos Futurity and the Starlet, and those both those winners are going to move along towards those races, and that's kind of, they serve as kind of a bridge to that, because generally speaking, the Starlet and the Los Alamitos Futurity have showcased later developing two-year-olds, the earlier developing ones at the top of the, you know, top of the charts out here end up going in the Breeders' Cup races, and you usually get some of the just maybe slightly later developing ones in those races. And, you know, Messier is certainly a horse who fits that bill. He won his maiden race just a little too late to be seriously considered for the Breeders' Cup, plus the barn already had Corniche, among others, Pinehurst. So so Messier was put on the path towards the Los Alamitos Futurity, and that's where he'll go next. And Ada, you know, she'll finally get a chance to stretch out. She's been very good sprinting when she gets things her own way, which didn't happen in the Del Mar debutante, and she got carved up on a hot pace. But she's got a pretty good foundation now of five races, so now it's time to see if she can handle a two-turn assignment when she goes in the Starlet next.
And I'm disappointed that I'm going to miss. I laid out that schedule for the Los Al meet the other day. You know, typically after symposium, I've come in and I love the Starlet. It's one of my favorite races, and you know the Futurity. But the way in which they broke it up this year is a little awkward. With the first and that first and third, well, just you know that for a number of times they've been run on the same day, then they split them up. So it and this year, one is being run that first weekend in December, and will be at Oaklawn, and then head to Arizona, and then. The second one, the Futurity, is not until a week from the following. So anyway, not going to be able to go this year.
You might want to recheck your calendar. I mean, one of them is on the 4th and the other's on the 11th. So
well,
I want to double check that.
I'm glad you said that, Jay, because when I looked, when I was booking tickets maybe 6-8 weeks ago, that is not what I had seen. That would be terrific. Excellent. All right. Well, then I may get the Los Al after all. Excellent. All right. Let's look ahead, Jay, to this week and the Native Diver. Kind of interesting tomorrow.
Yeah, it's, you know, some older horses that are trying to either resurrect their careers or maybe prove that they belong here. Eight Rings has entered. He'd be wheeling back just a couple of weeks after the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile, and it'll be interesting to see if, I can't imagine both he and Axeman would go, if very similar styles. Axeman's coming off of a long layoff, and I think a mile and an eighth might be stretching it for him off of he hasn't run since April. But Eight Rings is coming back on fairly short rest, off of not a bad effort, actually, I thought, in the Dirt Mile, considering he was running against the freakishly good Life Is Good. Midcourt is, when he runs, he's very effective at this level. His bugaboo has been that he bleeds, and you can't use Lasix in these stakes races, and they've tried to manage it. They said that he didn't bleed last time, when he certainly ran like a bleeder in the Awesome again. We'll see if he can bounce back and do better here. He has run well at Del Mar over the years, including winning this race a couple of years ago and then being second in it last year. And then you've got horses like Bal Harbour, who looks like he's kind of a cut below, but he's shipping in, trying to get his first win in quite a while. And Azul Coast was hampered by a pretty wide trip, I thought, in the Austin again. He ran well here during the summer meets. I could certainly see him bouncing back. There's quite a bit of pace in here, too. You know, stretch out sprinters like Wicked, established, I should say, going from the rail, and like I said before, either Eight Rings and or Axeman, among others. So should be some pace in here. But it's a hard race, at least for me, to be dogmatic. There's just way too many question marks, legitimate question marks, about just about everybody in this field.
Goes as the eighth. There's a 6.5 furlong maiden filly group that might be productive. Actually, some pricey fillies in here. Mike Rocher, appropriately named my racehorse, Spendthrift Runner, $450,000 upstart that Mandela debuts, and there's $320,000 peripheral making a second start for Baltus. Baffert's got an Uncle Mo filly, a Dare Manor for Michael Lund Peterson. This looks like a nice group. Michael McCarthy with a Bridalwood homebred by Empire Maker, Empire Gal. So that's something else to look forward to on the Saturday card. And then the Hollywood Turf Festival in the offing. I know we're out in front of it, Jay, but I'm off next week, so I thought I'd ask what we can look forward to.
Well, the noms will be coming out later today, so you'll really get to drill down on
cool
things then. But I know, for instance, Princess Grace stayed out here after running in the Gold Akova to go in the Matriarch. So I know, you know, for sure she's here. But I'll be interested in seeing what shows up on the noms, because Chad Brown generally supports that festival really strongly. Clement, Graham Motion has left some horses here for the Turf Festival. His top assistant, Alice Clapham, has stayed here since the Breeders' Cup and is overseeing his runners. So, but we'll know more when the noms come out later today. They closed yesterday. But it's always, as you were alluding to just before I came on, it's always just a great week of racing, and the weekend especially, with the Grade 1 Derby and Grade 1 Matriarch for the final 2 days of the season. But you've got the Turf Cup and the two-year-old races. It's really a fun weekend.
The red carpet, the Turf Cup, and Hollywood Derby, Jimmy Durante, the Sea Biscuit, the DeMille, the Matriarch. The Thanksgiving period, the Thursday through Sunday, always a highlight. Well, Jay, I appreciate it, and thanks for having me pull up Los Al, and in fact the Futurity is the 11th, so I will make arrangements and do a couple of days at Los Al leading up to Futurity. And I does this mean we can get a Langer's visit in?
It better. Yeah, no, we better get the Langer's or the Dalray or Philippe's. We got some good options. So once you get things squared away, let me know. And in the meantime, have a happy birthday tomorrow, and a nice Thanksgiving week off.
What's your Thanksgiving plan?
Go to the track in the morning, stay through the last race, and go home and have a nice dinner with my wife. We're having some people come over as well, so it'll be just nice and low-key. Ann likes making Thanksgiving dinner, and I like eating Thanksgiving dinner, so it's a good marriage.
What's your pie preference? We've been taking a survey.
Oh, pumpkin.
You're a pumpkin guy. Interesting. Yeah. All right. I'm trying to, yeah. I'm going to make my, I've been experimenting. I've got one more trial before we decide which one. We've made two so far. I you know me, I'm not,
sounds,
I can't.
Sounds like rough work there, taste testing pies to decide which one you're going to go with. That sounds sounds like a scam, actually, to me. One more, let's try this one.
Tina,
I'm not quite ready to decide.
Tina is the taste tester, because I'm much more of either a fruit pie, apple, more or less an apple pie with Dutch, you know, the crumb top, or a cream pie. Banana cream on the cream pie front.
All right. Duly noted.
So, if you ever have to buy me one, if you ever have to buy a pie for me,
today's birthday
reason,
boy would say, who you had
right?
on earlier, duly noted.
Jay, thanks so much, and we'll catch up in a few weeks, couple of weeks.
Excellent. Thanks, Steve. Have a good week off.
Jay Pribman, everybody, Thoroughbred LA with Jay, of course, tomorrow as well. And we'll look forward to what should be a really good finish to this Del Mar meet that started basically with Breeders' Cup. We're going to stay here and introduce you to Joe Paese, who won the Beat Pick contest. I'm excited for Joe because he said that he's come very close before to qualifying for Vegas, and so getting it, getting this avenue was really satisfying. And I want to find out about his background, and he joins us now. Joe, congratulations.
Thanks, Steve. Good morning. How's everything?
Terrific. And, I really appreciated, your happy response to winning the contest and, knowing that you've tried and that you've made attempts to get to Vegas before. So, the fact that it means a lot to you and that, you get to make your first NHC, I appreciate that this was the avenue.
Well, it's great, Steve. I appreciate the opportunity. And, yeah, I'm really excited. I've tried. I can tell you, it's really been the last 2 years that I've really put a concerted effort in trying to make the NHC. And as I said, I came close a couple times, but this time I got a little lucky. So, again, I appreciate the opportunity.
A couple of things, and I want you to tell everybody how you even got interested in the contest side of things, and then the approach that you've taken, and the qualifiers and so forth. Just talk about the experience and what got you interested in trying to make NHC.
Well, sure. I mean, I've been playing the horses since high school, so this is something that I've done a long time. I'm 61, but I really didn't get into the tournament scene until probably 3-4 years ago. Started dabbling around trying to get to the BCBC as well as the NHC. And as I said, it's only been really the last couple years that I've sort of watched, listen to your show, listen to the different strategies that people have. And again, my strategy is probably a little bit different. I'm more of a trip handicapper. I'm not a big fig guy. I believe in looking at the horse flesh as they come out. But clearly a trip handicapper first and foremost. And I just, as it related to last weekend, I got really fortunate because I think I hit all three races at Del Mar, which I follow pretty closely. But specifically, Thomas Bell. He's one of the trainers out in California that focuses on those low Baden claimers. And, historically, I've made a couple of really significant scores when he brings a horse out first or second time, Maiden 20, Maiden 30, and that was the $100 horse. So, I got lucky, and you got to get lucky. And then I caught the nightcap, which I the two previous times I thought I was going to qualify, I got nipped in the last race. And I thought, well, I'm not going to get nipped in the last race. So I went for a horse that I thought would be a little bit priced, corner horse. And as I said, got lucky.
And I called it a walk-off homer. See Through It was the winner, 9-1, paid $20 and $860. And you were sitting 15th, and you had been, you had been in striking distance, it seemed. And I did notice when I put up, I think I put up the standings with two races to go, and I saw that, you were not far off. And so when I scanned who people had picked in the nightcap, and I saw that you know, that you and also Lee Van Winkle, Lee ended up fifth.
Right.
You were the only two among the leaderboard that played the corner. And that, yeah. You know, I went back and looked at the PPs. There was plenty to like about See Through It.
Yeah, I thought so too. And actually, he's been pretty hot lately, corner, the last month or so. And again, it was one of those situations where I thought that last race, I wanted to stretch a little bit, but I didn't think it was much of a stretch. You know, it's one of those horses I liked, and as I said, I caught all three of the, I think, the Del Mar races to some degree. So, I thought he fit in the race for sure.
Talk a little bit about, you mentioned your trip handicapper, but you know, talk about your evolution as a player and the tools that you know, you've utilized historically and circuits that you follow, that element.
Yeah. It's really funny because, as I said, I started in high school. I actually had a buddy of mine that was doing figs back in the late 70s at our Catholic high school. We were doing figs in the classroom. Going out to the payphone, making some bets during the day. So not one of my proudest moments as a Catholic boy, but we did it. And then, you know, my wife of 38 years, we went to high school together, and I got oriented to the Fair Hill races. So, yeah, and you'd have the Clancy's on all the time. I started going there back in 1979.
Wow.
And really, that was probably the thing that really got me hooked. I mean, I just love the hunt meet, and obviously that piggybacks on the Saratoga, which I come up to every year. But to your specific question, you know, I use Formulator a little bit. Again, I don't use the rag sheets. I don't use those. Again, I spend a lot of time watching races. And
watching replays.
Obviously I the DRF, I use the, you know, the classic version, but I'm not a big speed figure guy. Sure, I look at it. I do believe horses for courses. I know a lot of people don't believe that, but I do. And like I said, it really comes down to trip handicapping for me and understanding the biases that exist. And it's really my approach, Steve. That's how I go at it.
You've got, and I see that you're 717, which would be Central PA, and you've got a little bit.
20 minutes from Penn National. So
there you go. All right.
Yeah, that's where I grew up, you know, right outside Penn National in that area, but not far from really, you know, Delaware. And again, Fair Hill is an hour and a half drive, but I just love it. I think I think a lot of people, you know, you experience the hunt meets. You go to Jersey.
Yeah, love it.
And I'm telling you, you know, it is, I think, just a part of the whole thoroughbred scene that a lot of people don't know about. But I, you know, the trips to Fair Hill and whatever are just great, really are.
Business wise, and mm-hmm. you're in finance or you're in banking?
Yeah, I've always been in the trusted investment business. I run a trusted investment group right now. That's been my background for 38 years for a bank in South Central Pennsylvania. That's what I've done my entire career. And again, you know, the trust business is a little specialized in the whole banking scene, but it's a great business. And again, that's what I do, and I've done it really since I got out of high school.
Well, you know, between you and Joe Besseker,
I actually did business with Joe. He wouldn't remember me. He ran a mutual fund that was very, very well known, and he's out of the Philadelphia area.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's in what we call the fund side of things. He has a mutual fund that he's had for years, and we actually, a lot of my clients participated in his fund. So. Yeah, I know Joe's business pretty well.
Have you owned it all? Have you dabbled in ownership?
Not at all. Not at all. You know, my wife is not a big horse person, and I'm really the horse person in the family. But now, never did. But again, as I said, my buddy in high school did. He was owning horses when he was in high school, believe it or not.
And, holy cow.
But I know I never dabbled. I've got a number of clients that do, that have been pretty successful, but not me personally.
Well, the opportunity to come to Vegas, and you got to block out that last week of January.
Steve, it's already blocked.
What circuit wise, when you're just playing on a Saturday or in a weekday afternoon, what's your approach in terms of bet structure and such?
Yeah, preference. I mean, I'm very, like, even though I'm 20 minutes from Penn National, I don't think I've bet Penn National in the last 4 or 5 years. I focus on the New York, but when I say New York, it's really the Belmont, Saratoga scene, Fairgrounds, Oakland, and California. A little bit of Gulfstream, but like a lot of your listeners, I'm a pick four, pick five guy. That's what I focus on. Once in a while, superfectas, but as I tell people, they always ask me. You know, I'm not a good bettor. I'm probably you'd give me a C minus on my bet construction, but I can pick winners. I mean, that's what I'm good at. But I'm not a great ticket structure guy. But yeah, weekends are really pick fours, pick fives, and no specific tracks.
Well, and I can identify with that comment. I mean, from the handicapping standpoint, I have a lot of confidence in identifying the win candidates, right. And it's one of the reasons that the multi-race wager approach, has become my, and I would say 70% of my.
Yeah.
Of my action is the multi-race wagers, and it's for that same thought process. I mean, it's gotten I have less confidence in building my individual race opinions. I mean, I'm betting.
Yeah.
I'm probably betting more win. I'm probably more win betting in recent. I would say. Couple of years than I had in quite a while. Just one of those scenarios where you think, if I get knocked out later, I this is a horse at whatever price, 8, 9, 10 to 1. I don't want to end up with nothing later. I mean, it used to be that the multi-race wagers were a way to keep money in your pocket and. Mm-hmm. And save you from, from silly action bets, but it at the same time you don't want to get to the last leg of sequences, and your best opinion was in the seventh, and it was right, but you didn't take advantage. So I'm finding myself, making sure that I leverage, what I consider the strong opinion.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, how many times do you look back after a pick four, pick five, and you had two horses you really liked, you didn't play them, and you ended up empty? It happens a lot, and I think it's just foolish when you think about it. So, yeah, I've gotten better as well with that. If I really got a horse that I really like, shorten it up a little bit. Play doubles, play pick threes, and not put all your eggs in the pick five. But I still love it. That's what I go after. I think it's a nice approach. But now I'm like you, no doubt about it. No doubt about it.
Well, we look forward to getting out to Vegas. How often are you a Vegas goer on a?
It's funny. I have three brothers. Three of us would go to Vegas every year for the NCAA tournament.
It nice.
Was just something we would do, yep. Religiously, and probably over the last 25 years, we probably made it 18, 19 years. So I've been to Vegas a fair amount. I'm also a high school basketball official, so I'm a basketball junkie, and that's sort of what we would do every year. Now, the last couple of years with COVID and other situations, we haven't been able to do it. So, no, I'm a Vegas guy. I love it. Know the area real well. So, as I said, I'm already blacked off, Steve. I'm ready.
I love it. All right. What are your favorite dining pushes?
It's funny. Emeralds at Venetian,
nice.
Somewhat of a steak guy. But we bounce all over the place. So, we try them all. Bobby Flay's got a couple of them out there that we hit. But like I said, we haven't been out there in the last probably 4 years. So it's been about 4 years.
Well, Bobby's, you know, in fact, Bobby was with us last week. And you know, his oh, my gosh, the Portofino is the new place with the Italian
seafood.
Right,
I heard you say that. That's right.
Michael Bacik says he has had two of the best meals he's ever had anywhere in his Portofino trips. It's become become the champ's go-to joint. And I told when I saw Bobby, where was that? I saw Flay. Actually, I talked to him. Actually, I was with Gary. We were at Belmont, and he called Gary, and Gary passed me the phone. And I told him. I said, next time to Vegas, because I didn't get there on the last trip, but I wanted to. But you know, you can only go. You know, you only got four nights or whatever it is, and it's tough. Let's be honest. I mean, if you're playing,
exactly.
You're especially going to be shy about, you know, you're not there. It's not all fun and games. You got to work. You got to handicap these races.
That's right. Where is Portofino's? What hotel?
It's in, oh my gosh. You have to ask that. Is it in the Cosmo?
Oh, okay.
It might be in the Bellagio, actually. Hold on. I will quickly get an answer to that. I think it's in Bellagio. Portofino, Flay. There we go. We'll see what. Let's see. I got some beautiful luxury linen sheets. That is not what we're after. Unbelievable. there we go. Portofino restaurant. It's in. Nope, not the one in Berlin, Connecticut. This is unbelievable. It's in the Mirage. It looks like.
Oh, Mirage, okay.
Mirage, there we go. I've got that wonderful, if you want Italian, the place that I found a couple of, however, it must have been 2 years ago, was that I just, it became, that's now Tina's declared it her favorite restaurant anywhere, Esther's Kitchen in the Arts District.
Uh-oh.
Put it on the list.
Yeah, Steve, I got to tell you, you're one of the few people that know how to pronounce my Italian last name.
Paese.
There you go. I'll be honest, don't really use it. We sort of Americanized it to peas, but it was funny when you left me that message. I found it very, very funny. Because people know that.
I went to school with a girl in Hartford who was Paese.
Oh, really?
Kathy Paese, yeah. The thing I don't understand is why your Twitter handle is Scotty W. What is that about? What's that story?
That goes back to high school. There was a horse at Penn National, Scotty W. Believe it or not, Steve, and I use that for a lot of my, I shouldn't be saying this, passwords, different things like that. And it just stuck, and I use it, and that's where it comes from. A horse way back in the late 70s. How about that?
Oh, that's terrific. That's terrific. Thank you. And by the way, I've got to make a correction. I said Portofino. I meant Amalfi. It's not Portofino.
Amalfi, okay.
Amalfi at Caesars. Thank you. Hammer just sent me a note, because Hammer went as well. There we go. So let's make a correction. too much fun. Joe, happy Thanksgiving. What's your Thanksgiving plan?
Well, we're actually doing it tomorrow. So,
wow.
I have three kids. My daughter's actually going to Colorado next week, so we moved it up to tomorrow. So we're doing a little early. Doing it a little early.
Nice. Nice. Well, happy enjoy. I'm delighted for your success to win the beat pick, and look forward to seeing you in Vegas. And it's not far off now, actually. I mean, that's...
No, not at all.
Reality.
Steve, thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you in Vegas.
Joe Paese, everybody, the beat pick winner this year, and his first trip to an NHC. I mean, you've been trying
right,
a little
Steve,
bit.
Have a good
Thank
day.
You, Joe. We'll stay here. Actually, we won't stay here. It's bottom of the hour. Let's take a break, Casey. We got to get the one break in, and James Scully is going to join us next. After James today, too, we've got a visit with Jason Boulay at Fairgrounds. Want to get advance in on the fairground season, which opens on Thanksgiving, one of the great traditions in racing. And so we'll talk to Jason, see how things are, how they're doing. You know, they got to build a new infield tote board after the devastation of the hurricane. And they lost, I think they lost three barns that had to be rebuilt. So we'll the hurricane was my grandmother Ida. My grandmother's name. So we'll catch up on everything going on at Fairgrounds. Looking forward to being there for Risen Star, which is our typical trip to NOLA. We'll check in with Hammer on the road on his way to Oaklawn. And Bobby Shoemaker, we'll see how his daughter is, how Annie is, how she's home from the hospital. We've also got one other hospitalization that I want to talk about when we get a chance this morning, too. All right. Halfway home, and James Scully with some action. See, maybe get some football from Scully, too. All right, back after this, second half at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed.